Hey, Brian, pop quiz. What do you think is the most common struggle for pastors in marriage ministry?
I don't know, Chris. Maybe not feeling confident?
Yeah, that's probably a good answer. But according to Lifeway Research, the most common struggle is lack of time.
Oh.
Second is lack of resources. And this is yours. And third is feeling unequipped. I think we've all been there. But that's probably not a surprise, but it's important. The health of our churches is directly related to the health of its marriages. That's why Lifeway created WooMarriage.com, a brand new tool that provides Christ-centered marriage coaching for every couple in your church. Backed by research and designed with your church in mind, Woo Marriage features video courses taught from a Christ-centered perspective. Courses provide practical help for communication, managing finances, handling conflict, and more. There's even courses for church leaders. The best part? It's easy. With one simple click, you can assign courses, start coaching, and start winning at work and at home. Whether you need to prepare couples for marriage, strengthen marriages, or restore relationships, you'll have an affordable, flexible solution right at your fingertips. Try it for free 1 month with offer code LEADERSHIP, all one word, not case sensitive, at checkout. That's offer code LEADERSHIP, all one word, at checkout on woomarriage.com/free trial.
Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome to another episode of Group Answers. My name is Chris, and I'm here with my co-host, Brian Daniel. What's up, Brian?
Hey, Chris. It's good to be back.
Brian is
back. I can't believe you went without me on 101, though.
Yeah, I think it was 103.
The number is immaterial. The fact is, you moved on without me.
We did.
You were just waiting for that 100th episode before you're just going to retire me right out of here.
It was hard. I will say, we had Brandon Hiltabeitel stand in for you, and he's not you. I mean, I love Brandon. We all love Brandon.
We do.
But no
and
one,
Scarlett.
And Scarlett. But no one can quite fill your seat.
Yeah, he doesn't have the words.
He even tried the boy howdy.
Did he?
He did.
The legacy.
And it suffered because he just, he's from Miami or something. But anyways. But this is going to be fun. We also have sitting in the room, Joel Polk. What's up, Joel?
Hey, guys.
Joel, you've been a part of this a couple times.
Man, I'm becoming a regular. I'm hoping to come on more and more. But you guys, I'm just a fill-in for, I feel like maybe a Brandon. I just come in when people are absent or when I don't know.
Or when we run out of ideas.
Yeah, that's right.
We're like, Joel sits out there.
But it's good to be here again. I'm
somebody get Joel.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that Brian has as much energy as he does. I don't know if it's fake or not, but I'm impressed, Brian.
It's fake.
Yeah.
Well, we should mention why.
Yes.
We hinted
when
at
the
it.
Lights come on.
Yeah, we hinted at it on the last episode, but you guys are, and that's what we're going to talk about on this episode, because you guys are fresh off a secret mission? A secret trip.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Kind of like black box CIA deep in the Himalayas, right?
That's well,
right.
It was project related. So we were working on a Bible study project with one of our most popular authors, I would say, David Platt. A lot of you guys probably know him. He wrote Radical, Counterculture. What was the first
Follow
one?
Follow Me.
Follow Me, yeah. Radical was first, then Follow Me, then Counterculture. Great guy. Joel and I were able to spend more than a week, I guess it was close to 10 days, with David and members of the Radical team and a film crew in, yes, the Himalayan region.
And you're not allowed to, literally,
that's
we're
true.
Not just making this up. You can't say exactly where you were.
Because it would jeopardize the sensitive work that's going on there. Yes, we've been asked not to be specific about either the nation or the any of the surrounding area, or even the specific region that we were in within this country.
Wow. So come clean, Joel. Were you actually like in Iowa, like with the green screen?
It was Kansas.
Was it like in-game? You just had green screens all around you?
By some of the pictures that we took, it certainly felt like
they're
green
breathtaking.
Screen. Yes, they're it was a one-of-a-kind type of trip. Brian and I took a lot of selfies. And I felt like we ruined most of the picture we were in because of the beautiful landscape around us. But it was a good trip. It was a long trip, and the travel to that wasn't.
Yeah, talk about the travel. How long and what did you guys go through just to get there?
Dubai. So we went to Boston. We had a layover there. Then Dubai. It was a 13-hour flight from Boston to Dubai, and then from Dubai on to our final destination. All told, with layovers, it was 34 hours, which is the longest I've ever been on the road. Together at one time, and it was tough. Probably a lot of our listeners have done that before, but I have not. And the reentry was particularly. It was intense, Chris. I think Joel would agree. And I shared it with a group this morning. Chris, you were in that meeting talking about just how well this came off, and all the prayer support we had was definitely a factor in that.
Right.
There was no way that we should have been able to pull off going up close to 13,000 feet for 6 days with, what was it, Joel, like 9 or 10 of us? So I had a film crew, there was editorial staff, Joel and I, and there were a few others from the Radical team along with the author. And we lived in this, basically on the land for that long, and no one got sick, at least in our group.
We got up to 15,000 over 15,500 or so.
Yeah, didn't you say you guys climbed up from like 12-something to 15-something?
Yeah, it's about a 3,000-foot vertical gain, and we actually filmed up there. And I think we'll use some of that, won't we?
Yeah.
It was mostly...
So were you carrying like a lot of camera gear?
Well, we were. But the film guys, I think I carried the drone. I think Joel carried something.
Batteries and stuff.
Yeah, so that's the reason we both went, was so we would have the opportunity to help. Just you need hands. And so there was a lot of preparation that went into it, both just on the packing side, logistically getting just the concept for the video shoot down. Joel managed a lot of that and did just a fantastic job doing it, but also just the physical demands of the trip. We had to get ready that way too, because we had a 10-mile trek at one point. There was, you guys know, I go out to Colorado and play around on the 14ers out there. This was 1,600 feet higher than that. Mm. So you're up there with the altitude, so that's no joke.
And you guys, neither one of you got altitude sickness?
Brian and I were fortunate enough to not experience food poisoning or altitude sickness. There were some on our trip that I think every trip, there's always someone that experiences something like that. But we were relatively healthy, but I think that we're feeling it energy-wise now.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the closest I've come to, I went to Africa a few years ago. And actually going wasn't too bad. And I think we traveled 30 hours, something like that, to get there. And going wasn't, you kind of adjust a little bit. Coming back.
That's right.
I mean, I spent a week of falling asleep at like 5 o'clock during dinner. Like I would just sit there and like my face would be in the carrots.
Or waking up at 2 a.m. like wide awake.
Yes. And it's,
I did that this morning.
And was this kind of, I know, Brian, this was kind of a first experience like this for you. And I remember my first, I've done a little bit of this in mission work, but what are your feelings now, fresh off of it? I mean, what are you seeing with your eyes that you didn't see before?
That's a really good question. And admittedly, I'm still framing up portions of this and just looking faith systems like Hinduism and Buddhism in the eyes for the first time. I am guilty of buying into the westernized version of both of those faith systems and understanding them as like peace and meditation and oneness and like calm and the idea of being enlightened, which I obviously neither of those things, but I've always kind of not taking it as seriously. Mm-hmm. And when you're there and you're seeing it for the first time, you're seeing people that are scared to death not to get what they deserve. And I remember standing, we were next to this one Buddhist temple one time, and that's when it really hit me for the first time. Growing up in the South and spending most of my time here, we've lived in other places like New Mexico, but it's been mostly in the South, and hearing a term like good news and thinking that I really understood that, but for the first time really understanding what the good news really means in a region like that. The ministry itself that we worked with is only concerned, that's not the best way to put it, but is their charter is to reach unreached people groups. So they've been in this one valley, for instance, this one area of this particular region, 15 years and had one baptism.
Wow. 15 years.
Yeah, 15 years to get one baptism. And that's, and this is an organization that's really organized and I think pretty well funded. So it's not like they're just sending a couple of people up there. I mean, they're reaching, I mean, they're doing everything they can to reach these people. And they've had one baptism in 15
years.
That's
how tough the soil is.
So there's that. And there, we were in this one place that's it's supposedly, it's not supposedly, it is one of the holy places for this particular faith system. And Joel, you can speak into this, but there's nothing about it that's holy. In fact, it's the exact opposite of holy. Everything about it is the opposite of holy. And just seeing some things for the whole time I was thinking about Isaiah 61:1-2 and Luke 4 when Jesus rolls the scroll and reads from Isaiah and announces kind of his mission. I've come to set free the captives, to restore sight to the blind, and replace beauty with beauty for ashes. And just seeing that, experiencing that culturally, and we were immersed in it for a few days. I mean, there's people everywhere, and every one of them is just without that, the hope that, honestly, I think I've probably taken for granted. Mm.
Yeah, I remember having that feeling. It was in Haiti, my first time in Haiti. And you'd think, being that close to the United States, that it's not that dark. But I just remember this overwhelming dark feeling that it felt like there was no hope. And yeah, it was because they're so deep into voodoo and witchcraft and all of that. It's like, how do you break through this with the gospel of Jesus Christ when their entire being is about this you know, this religion? You know, so I know that feeling. What about you, Joel? What did you come out of this?
Just to jump on some of the same themes that Brian was saying, I think that there's about 9 million people in the region that we were in, and I think that there's around 100 or even less than 100 followers of Jesus in those areas. So it's
wow,
a hard
I missed
area.
That number. No kidding.
So, yeah, so it's a hard. Whew. It was a hard area. A lot of the things that we saw were. You know, in the Western world, a lot of these religions are, as Brian was talking about, are romanticized in some ways. Mm-hmm. And it's very much a dark religion, and there's dark imagery and satanic type images and creatures that are in all of their artwork and a lot of their practices. But it's not just that. It's a lot of their practices and rituals themselves, how one... is buried, for instance. You know, they in the book, which I don't even know if we've described it or said the title of it yet, but David Platt has the book coming out in September called Something Needs to Change, and the Bible study will have the same name and basically take people alongside the same journey that David went on. But some of the journey that he went on described the burning bodies of people who had just died. And so David talks about the physical representation of this spiritual reality that these people who have never heard the name of Jesus before, their family members are burning them because that's the ritual. Mm-hmm. In the top of the mountains where there's no firewood, for instance, this sounds dark, but they're are these people called body breakers, and they'll break these bodies apart once they die, and they'll put them on this mound as a kind of an act of worship, and birds will come and take away pieces that had not, you know, been taken off elsewhere, and they'll crush the bones, and it's a really dark type of practices that are going on. And so I think that Brian and I've been at other places around the world, but this was probably some of the darkest areas that we were in, both from a physical perspective, but then also a spiritual perspective as well. And that's actually what David talks about, this collision between the spiritual and physical, the urgent needs, both physically and spiritually. And so That's kind of the direction that this Bible study has taken.
Joel mentioned it, Chris, but the idea behind this project and the reason that we did what we do, because we could shoot videos anywhere, so mm-hmm. why go to such lengths? Right. Well, the idea here is that David, as much as he would love to take everyone on the same trip that we just went on and show them what we saw and then wrestle with the same questions, that's just not possible. So the impetus here is through this video, through the study, to as much as possible in a curriculum like this, to invite groups on this same journey and expose them to the same thing.
Right.
So this was far from a vacation for Joel and me or anybody else on the trip. Mm-hmm. I mean, we stayed in this little house. It's not like we were out under the stars, but it was really primitive. We're mm-hmm. up close to 13,000 feet. There's no heat. There's no internet. So we were separated from our families for more than 2 weeks.
So you guys were literally in the dark.
Yeah, yeah. And it was beautiful. There's no doubt that it was. That's right. It was beautiful, but it was really foreign and it was really demanding. I'm not going to lie. It was not the easiest project we've done. But we believed for us to be effective in this way and to really steward this message from David Platt as well as we can, it's what we had to do. Mm. So. It's available in October, and it's going to be something else. I think Joel would agree. So David Platt, I think, is one of the foremost theologians in our convention,
yep.
and certainly in evangelicalism, and certainly among the pastorate, he would have to be also have that same kind of mantle. Because of these experiences, and Joel referred to the urgent physical needs and the urgent spiritual needs, you have this guy who's asking questions that a new believer would ask and wrestling with the same questions. So he can't be alone there. Mm. I know my group, Joel, your group, Chris, your group, there's got to be people in there that ask those questions essentially, what about the problem with evil?
Yeah.
What do you do with that? Sometimes we give these rose-colored Pollyanna answers. This does not allow you to do that. Mm-hmm. You've got to engage it, and it was really an eye opener for me. And I hope that it translates through the work that we've done. That groups engaging this content can have the experience that we've had. We did everything we could to do it,
and that's what David wanted. He was so excited when we came alongside of him to do this resource specifically for groups. Of course, individuals, like all of David's other past books, will be able to have the opportunity to pick this up and read it individually. But David was really excited about us partnering with him so that groups, essentially trekkers, could see the same sights and smell the same smells and walk alongside David in this journey. And so that's the idea. Mm-hmm. And it's like Brian said, they're answering questions that David is asking himself, mm-hmm. questions that he has so confidently been able to preach on a Sunday morning, but now faced with the reality that there are people who have never heard the name of Jesus, he's asking these questions himself. And so I've referred to it to some that who have asked as the other resources that David has done in the past have essentially been sermon series in chapter form or in session form. And so mm-hmm. session one would be one Sunday sermon, and then session two would be the next in a series of a radical or a follow me type of sermon series. But this is very much different. This kind of depicts the journey that David went on. Now this would be the third trip that David has gone on, and him kind of asking the same kind of questions that he has struggled asking in the face of deep spiritual need. One story that I love, and it was convicting, was a story of him meeting with a family inside their home, their small, very small, remote home, and David was asking about some of the rituals that they were practicing, and the family was confused because the family assumed that David knew about these because David practiced them himself. Mm-hmm. And so they were confused that David didn't know about these basic questions of these rituals. And David realized for the first time that these people assumed that everyone in the entire world had practiced these religions and these rituals. And David realized these people never had the choice. They never knew that they had a choice, at least.
Wow.
They thought that this was what they this was the life that everyone had lived,
right.
And this constant reincarnation and this cycle of life from death and suffering and rebirth was the same understanding that everyone had. And so there's one quote from the book that I really love, and I want to share. I've shared this with about everybody that I've talked to. But after going through hearing the story and reflecting on the story, David writes this. He said, "For over 2,000 years, these spectacular mountains may have been declaring the glory of God, but not for one second have these majestic peaks ever said a thing about Jesus. God has revealed his greatness to every person in these villages, but hardly any of them have ever heard about his grace."
Wow.
And so it was really heavy. It was good, but it was a really heavy time of seeing these people face to face, the unreached people group that are described in this book.
Wow. So the resource will be out in October, right? You said the book will be out when?
September 17th. It's mid-September.
Okay. Is the Bible study the same title as the book?
That's right.
And it's, say it again?
Something Needs to Change.
Something Needs to Change. I'm going to take my group through that. Absolutely.
So here's the deal. I've been in denominational work for more than 20 years. I've been in group leadership for just about that long as well. And work at Lifeway and have for a while. And Joel and our team, we create discipleship group resources. Yet when confronted with the realities that we saw the last week, you find yourself, or I found myself, just wondering aloud, you know, am I making a difference? Mm-hmm. And so that title, Something Needs to Change, I think David, the author, is being, David Platt, the author, is being honest. He's not necessarily telling us you need to change or what you need to change. He just knows that whatever we're doing now is not working.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to require more of ourselves. It's going to require more of our hearts. It's going to require more prayer and more mobilization and more intentionality. And it really is an open invitation. And I certainly encourage everyone out there just to at least give it a look.
That's good. Well, thanks, guys. Thanks, Joel. Thanks, Brian, for doing this, for going out on this trip. Because on the surface of it, it sounds like, you know, amazing, but also very, very brutal and difficult. So thanks for making that happen and helping make this resource. And it looks, just looking at you, you guys need some sleep.
I accidentally fell asleep just then. Sorry, what'd you say?
Brian does every show. It's okay. It's all right. That's not abnormal.
Only during the closing.
Yeah. And Brian, you got sick on the way back, right?
Yeah, I did.
You spent the whole time in the mountains, didn't get sick, and then ate something bad on a plane.
God's grace. It may have just been the overwhelming part of it. I don't know. I think it's probably just diet.
I did that in Honduras and ended up being I was dehydrated, but I thought I had the flu. And there's nothing like being in a third world country and being sick.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, it's just.
And in the interest of full disclosure, or maybe that's the last thing we need here in this given context, but I think I got local food cocky. And so I got early on, I was like real tentative and I was like, I got this. And I got a little riskier as the trip went on. And
I think somewhere
in there, I crossed a line.
It happens to the best of us.
Too much yak cheese.
Yeah. All right, well, we need to wrap it up, but thanks again, guys. And if you enjoy Group Answers, please go and subscribe and rate us on iTunes. We promise if you give us good ratings, we'll do better shows. Until then, we'll do what we do. But no, just kidding. But go subscribe, rate us. We really appreciate that. And we will catch you next time for episode 106.